just want to add on to one more announcement from announcement time, and that is that this week, as you know, on Wednesday, we have core meeting. For those who would like to or are interested in finding out more about baptism and what it means to follow Jesus in baptism, there is going to be a seminar just before core night. Our pastor Kevin is going to lead that, and he's going to, if you'd like to come to the ministry center at 6 p.m., core is at 7:30, and you can find out more about baptism and see if that is the step that God's calling you to take next in your spiritual journey. And Kevin, I believe, is out with the junior hires right now, running a class with them, so that's great. Well, we continue the story this morning of Ruth, and it's just a great book. And Peter, it has to do with tipping as well. I'm sure it does. It's in there somewhere. But we want to talk about compassion and compassion and how it relates to generosity, and that gets to the end of my mess, so I'll get ahead of myself here. But faithfulness and compassion meaning together. It's just this book takes a profound turn. And we've been kind of camping out in chapter one the last couple of weeks, and it's been this difficult time. And to set it up, there's been Naomi and Elimelech, and they head from Bethlehem, and they go to Moab, and it's because there's trauma and difficulty, and there's famine. And while she's there, she loses her husband. And then she loses both her sons, and all she's left with is her two daughters-in-law, and then one of them stays, and the other one, Ruth, goes with her. And so now they've headed back on the road back to Bethlehem. And so we pick up the story there this morning in chapter 2, and I'm going to read from the Message translation. Now, I know the Message just flows nicely when you're talking story, so we usually go with a New Living Translation, but this morning I'm going to read out of the Message because it's just a great story. And I don't think we lose anything in the Message. So it so happened that Naomi had a relative by marriage, a man prominent and rich, connected with Elimelech's family. His name was Boaz. And one day Ruth, the Moabite foreigner, said to Naomi, "I'm going to work. I'm going out to glean among the sheaves, following after some harvester who will treat me kindly." Naomi said, "Go ahead, dear daughter." And so she set out. She went and started gleaning in a field, following in the wake of the harvesters. Eventually, she ended up in the part of the field owned by Boaz, her father-in-law, Elimelech's relative. A little later, Boaz came out from Bethlehem, greeting his harvesters, "God be with you." They replied, "And God bless you." Boaz asked his young servant, who was foreman over the farmhands, "Who's that young woman? Where did she come from?" The foreman said, "Why, that's the Moabite girl, the one who came with Naomi from the country of Moab. She asked permission. 'Let me glean,' she said, 'and gather among the sheaves, following after your harvesters.' She's been at it steady ever since, from early morning until now, without so much as a break." Then Boaz spoke to Ruth. "Listen, my daughter, from now on, don't go to any other field to glean. Stay right here in this one, and stay close to my young men. Watch where they're harvesting and follow them, and don't worry about a thing. I've given orders to my servants not to harass you. When you get thirsty, feel free to go and drink from the water buckets that the servants have filled." She dropped to her knees, then bowed her face to the ground. "How does this happen that you should pick me out and treat me so kindly? Me, a foreigner?" Boaz answered her, "I've heard all about you. I've heard about the way you treated your mother-in-law after the death of her husband, and how you left your father and mother and the land of your birth and have come to live amongst a bunch of total strangers. God reward you well for what you've done, and with a generous bonus besides from God, to whom you've come seeking protection under his wings." She said, "Oh, sir, such grace, such kindness. I don't deserve it. You've touched my heart, treated me like one of your own, and I don't even belong here." At the lunch break, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, eat some bread, dip in the wine." So she joined the harvesters, and Boaz passed the roasted grain to her. She ate to her fill and even had some left over. When she got up to go back to work, Boaz ordered his servants, "Let her glean where there's still plenty of grain on the ground. Make it easy for her. Better yet, pull some of the good stuff out and leave it for her to glean. Give her special treatment." Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. When she threshed out what she had gathered, she ended up with nearly a full sack of barley. She gathered up her gleanings, went back to town, and showed her mother-in-law the results of her day's work. She also gave her leftovers from her lunch. Naomi asked her, "So where did you glean today? Whose field? God bless whoever it was that took such good care of you." Ruth told her mother-in-law, the man whom I work today, his name is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, why, God bless that man. God hasn't quite walked out on us after all. He still loves us in bad times as well as good. Naomi went on, that man, Ruth, is one of our circle of covenant redeemers, a close relative of ours. Ruth the Moabitess said, well, listen to this. He also said, stick with my workers until my harvesting is finished. Naomi said to Ruth, that's wonderful, dear daughter. Do that. You'll be safe in the company of his young women. No danger now of being raped in some stranger's field. So Ruth did it. She stuck close to Boaz's young women, gleaning in the fields daily until both the barley and wheat harvesting were finished, and she continued living with her mother-in-law. An incredible picture of faithfulness and of compassion. Faithfulness and compassion will change the world. It really will. And oftentimes we think of grandiose plans, and we think of big things that happen and how that all comes about in our lives, and we miss something that is so easily overlooked. Two characteristics which define God in such a profound way. A God who is faithful and a God who's compassionate. And Kevin referred last week a little bit to how this book called The Gospel of Ruth, like how the story of Jesus, the story of God, is portrayed in these four or five chapters here in Ruth. And it's amazing when you look at it how God is working out his plan in the story much the same way as he worked out his plan in the person of Jesus. When you look at kind of the 3 days of Jesus, at the end of Jesus' life, there was a three-day story there. There was the first day where tragedy hit, where Jesus was crucified. And we have the story in Ruth where tragedy hit, famine, death. It looked hopeless. Then we have that in-between time. And then we have the third day, the day Jesus resurrected from the grave. The day it was just unbelievable. It came bursting forth in just this grand future. And it's interesting that kind of picture is what we see here in Ruth. We have this picture of Naomi and Ruth just looking like it's just devastation, nothing ahead in their lives. And then they're living in that period of time. And I was saying to Kevin this week, I'm looking forward to turning the story on this, turning the page on this story, because we've been talking about difficulty. And what do you do during that time? And that's significant, because this morning I want to talk a little bit during that in-between time, between tragedy and resurrection, what do you do? And I love the words of John Ortberg as he talks about in his book, Jesus, Who Is This Man? He talks about those times when you're in between. He says, here's some of the things we can do. We talked about this last week. You can wait. You can rest. You can ask. You can whine, complain. You can trust. Work with God even when he feels far away. And what I think we see in the story of Ruth here is a working with God even when he feels very far away. And we're going to talk about that. But what is so cool is this three-day story kind of idea is there throughout Scripture. You can see it again and again. There's difficulty, there's this in-between time, and there's this end time. And this is where he says he talks about this Saturday. You know, the death of Christ, Good Friday, and Resurrection Sunday are probably two of the most talked about days in all of history. But what about Saturday? Why Saturday? Why the in-between day? He says, this odd day raises a question. Why is there a Saturday? It doesn't seem to further the storyline at all. We might expect that if Jesus was going to be crucified then resurrected, God would just get on with it. It seems strange for God to spread two events over 3 days. And then he goes on to talk about this. He says, the Old Testament scriptures are filled with what we might call third day stories. When Abraham is afraid he's going to have to sacrifice Isaac, he sees the sacrifice that will save his son's life on the third day. Joseph's brothers get put in prison and they're released on the third day. Israelite spies are told by Rahab to hide from their enemies and then they'll be safe on the third day. When Esther hears that her people are going to be slaughtered, she goes away to fast and pray. And on the third day, the king receives her favorably. He goes on to say, on the first day, all three-day stories have a structure. On the first day, there is trouble. On the third day, there is deliverance. On the second day, there is nothing. just the continuation of trouble. The problem with third day stories is you don't know it's a third day story until the third day. When it's Friday, when it's Saturday, as far as you know, deliverance is never going to come. It may just be a one-day story, and that day of trouble may last the rest of your life. He goes on to talk about what it's like to be a Cubs fan and them never winning the world pennant in 100 years. But here's the point. Here's Ruth and Naomi living at the beginning of this passage in that second day, not knowing if it's just going to continue. But I love how this story starts with Ruth saying to Naomi, she says, you know what? I'm going to go out there and do something. Well, first of all, it starts even further back when even in the difficulty, Ruth says, I've chosen to follow God. And back in verse 16 and 17 of chapter 1, you might remember this. She says, your God will be my God and your people my people. And she says, I'm committed to your God. Ultimately, she's saying, I'm banking on God's faithfulness. I'm not going back to the gods that I know are not true. I'm going to be completely dependent on this God. And she goes with Ruth to this new land, to Jehovah, to Yahweh, to this God of the Israelites, the God who would ultimately send his son Jesus, as we know on the third day, the end of the story is, as a descendant of her child. She didn't know that at the time, but she chose God above anything else. And you know, faithfulness, one of the aspects of faithfulness is finding your ultimate help from God, is saying, you know what, no matter what the circumstances are, and I might be living in that second day where continuation of trouble looks, I'm going to go firstly to God for help. My first prayer is going to be, God, could you help me in this situation? And my last prayer is going to be, God, could you help me in this situation? I believe that you are faithful, and I'm going to, even though I can't see it, I'm going to trust fully in what you're going to do. And it begs the question for us, where do I look most for help? How quickly does it come to my mind when difficulty comes or the continuation of trouble or just the flat line of life? Am I going first of all to God? Am I going to continue to be faithful to God and keep going to him for help? Now, it doesn't mean we play the victim card, and we'll get to that in a moment here, but it does mean that we say, you know what, I'm not going to make compromises in my life and go after things and push God out of my life. You know, when you think about it, one of the things that doesn't escape me, in the time of Judges, it was a morally lapse and dangerous time even. I mean, even when it talks here, like, there's a chance of getting raped out in the field or whatever. And you see stories in Judges where people make compromises, even morally. They say, you know, in my loneliness or whatever, I'm just, you know what, I'm going to find some help here. And make compromises. It might be financially going, you know what, I'm going to find my help in finances, and if I have to make some shady business deals, or, you know, that's where my hope is. If I be just financially, if I can get out there, that's where it's. And faithfulness is saying, God, yeah, I'm going to take whatever steps. I'm not going to compromise what I know is going to honor you. I'm going to be faithful to you because you're faithful to me, and I believe that. So faithfulness means finding your ultimate help from God, and we see that in the story of Ruth. And it's actually acknowledged and affirmed by Boaz. Later on, Boaz sees her as a person of faithfulness. He says in verse 12, he says, may the Lord, the God of Israel, this is what he's saying to Ruth when he first meets her, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. He's saying, you're known as that person who goes to God, who's faithful to God. That's where you're looking for your help from. And I think it's just so significant that her life was already, her reputation was, you're faithful to God. And it's a question we can ask of ourselves and say, is that true in my life? Am I faithful to God? Am I looking to him? And because ultimately, that is the characteristic of God, is ultimate faithfulness in our lives. I love that song, and we sang it last week, and I almost asked Ron Yell to sing it again, lead us in it again this morning, by Chris Tomlin, we've sing it quite often. It's just an awesome song. I lift my hands to believe again. You are my refuge, you are my strength. As I pour out my heart, these things I remember. You are faithful God forever. That's really what Ruth was saying to God through her life, through her actions. Faithfulness means something, doing something you can do. I love it when at the beginning of this passage, it's like Ruth just says, You know what, Naomi, I know you're down and out. You're on the mat. You've renamed yourself Mara. You're bitter. But she says in verse 2, she says, I'm going to work. I'm going out to glean among the sheaves. I'm following after some harvester who will treat me kindly. Here's Ruth saying, you know what? There is something I can do. It's harvest season. And even at the end of verse 1, we see just kind of a foretaste of God already giving a glimmer of hope. They were heading back and it was harvest season. It's God being faithful. And she says, God's providing a harvest. I'm going to bank on that command that was given in Leviticus, where the harvesters were to leave something out on the field. They weren't to take everything. Leviticus 19:9 says, it says, when you harvest the crops of your land, this is God showing his compassion, his generosity, his faithfulness. He says, when you harvest the crops of your land, do not harvest the grain along the edges of your fields, and do not pick up what the harvesters drop. It's the same with your grape crop. Do not strip every last bunch of grapes from the vines. Do not pick up the grapes that fall on the ground. Leave them for the poor and the foreigners living among you. I am the Lord your God. That sentence right at the end there is just God saying, that's my character. I leave something. I'm faithful to you. I will do that. Will you be faithful and compassionate and do that to others? And here we find a man, Boaz. We don't know how much this command was even being followed in the book of Judges. They had dismissed a whole bunch of God's commands at that time, but Boaz was doing that. He was leaving something out. It's like the businessman who just leaves something on the table, doesn't take everything. And in that is showing compassion. But Ruth shows her faithfulness by saying, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to gather that. I'm going to just, you know, there is something I can do. I can show up. There's a bunch of things I don't have control over. You think about it. She says, she couldn't make Naomi sweet. She couldn't, you know, turn her from, you know, pleasant one to, you know, change her back from bitter to sweet. There's some things that she couldn't do. She couldn't change society all at once. There was this horrific male-dominated society at the time where women just didn't have a chance to get a decent job at the time. She couldn't change that all, but there was something that she could do. She could go out and follow among the harvesters, so she did that. And she faithfully did it. Later on, it says that the foreman of Boaz's crew sees, and there's a line in there in verse 7 where it says, she's come, she's gathering sheaves among her harvesters. She's been at it ever steady ever since, from early morning until now without so much of a break. She just kept at it. It shows the faithfulness of her, just kind of saying, you know, these are some things I can do. And maybe in our situation that you might find yourself in right now, you might be a student, you might say, you know, I've got that class or I've got that teacher. But there's a faithful thing that you can do. You can show up. I love the story. I love the saying, someone said that 80% of life is just showing up. You know, when you think about it, 80% of life just showing up. There might be a place where you feel frustrated or you feel jammed or you feel just unhappy. It's just getting out there and doing that. And I love, Peter, you've got a line, I think, one of your maxims of life is, effort consistently exerted in the same direction will produce results. Something like that, anyhow. If you just keep faithfully doing what you can, then there's a faithful God who's also going to meet us in that point as well. Faithfulness means doing the something you can do. What's the something that we can do, faithfully lived out in our lives, in our relationships, whatever it is, in our work situations? I'm just going to work at it faithfully. And then the third aspect that we see of Naomi is a faithfulness in loving others when they're hard to love. I would think Naomi, she wouldn't have been the nicest of mother-in-laws to be with at the time. But here's Naomi, and it's emphasized again and again, she stuck with her. She stuck by her. She was faithfully loving through the thick and the thin. And Boaz had heard about that too, and it says in the story here, I've heard all about you, heard about the way you treated your mother-in-law after the death of her husband, and then how you've come to live in this land. Faithfulness means coming alongside of that person, supporting another person that God calls us to walk alongside of and stand by through thick and thin. And it might be a family member. It might be just that EGR person. You might have heard of that. That extra grace required kind of person that you say, you know what, I'm going to stick by that person. Not in a martyrdom kind of way, but just in a, you know what, God, you're going to fill me with your love and I'm going to stand by that person. I'm not going to get all judgy. I'm going to stand. Here was, you know, there was incredible prejudices in that land at the time towards the Moabites. But I'm moving past that, and I'm just going to love a person. I'm going to love others, even when they're hard to love. So we see that kind of faithfulness in Ruth. We have Ruth meeting Boaz out on the field. And in Boaz, we see this incredible picture of compassion. And this whole kinsman redeemer kind of picture is just an incredible picture of God. And Ruth and Boaz by no means were perfect people who lived it out perfectly, I'm sure. But I just love how Scripture just gives us like tangible ways that people are living out faithfulness and compassion and showing that from God. Boaz's name means in him is strength. So here is a person who has some strength. He's got a field. He's got some resources. And he comes and he helps a person in need. And it started with him, first of all, noticing somebody in need. Compassion begins with noticing a need. Noticing someone on the outside. You know, Boaz, you can imagine, is a busy man. He's got fields, he's got crews, he's got work to do. And he comes alongside and he says to the on verse 5, "Who's this young woman? Where did she come from?" And, you know, some people kind of imagine, you know, there is a love story aspect to Ruth. But I don't think this was the classic, you know, their eyes met across a crowded room and, you know, they instantly fell in love sort of thing. I think actually Ruth would have looked downtrodden. She could have looked very poor. She was identifiable by, you know, her ethnicity or who she was. You know, the foreman made a point of saying, "That's a Moabite girl, country of Moab." And here's Boaz noticing and immediately giving compassion to her as well. Everyone just saw her as a foreigner. Boaz saw her. He had open eyes to the needy. And you know, I think it needs to be said that there is no shortage of people in need out there. And part of it for us is just on one level, just seeing it when we walk down this, when we drive down the street, to see and to maybe say a prayer for that person that we see in need, that obviously in need on the street. It might be a need that we don't miss it when we're in the busyness of the supermarket or the busyness of our day just coming along somebody beside somebody. It may be in a relational context in our schools or in our work situations where somebody is continually on the outside, but people don't even notice it anymore. They don't even notice the need. And somehow what God does in our hearts is he brings this calling and he says, "You know what, I've noticed you and you matter to me." And so it makes us look at others in a new way too, and to notice the need that is there. You know, in Jesus, if ever there was something, one of the things that just so characterized Jesus was his compassion. His compassion for people, not because they necessarily deserve it, but just because they had a need. And he would see. He'd be walking along and in crowds and people calling his name and looking to him, and he would notice that little guy up in the tree, the tax collector, Zacchaeus. He was the kind of person who was always doing this. And the people of following Jesus began it changed society, even in Jesus' day, where it was the powerful, the influential, the beautiful people, that was the people that the people went to, much like today. But in that day, too, there was just huge injustices done towards, as we know, towards women, towards slaves as well. And one of the stories that I came across was just awesome about what happened in the early church when compassion started to change them and they started to notice the person who was on the outside. There's this, in the Roman world, a slave was a person that was, and I can't say this probably because I don't know Latin, but non habens personam. It was a person who literally, before the Roman law, did not even have a face. Didn't have a face. And so the masters of these people literally held the power of life and death over their slaves. But in the early church, when a slave, it says, or would come into a church, the rich and the powerful, might be a master, would get down on his knees, take a basin and a towel, and wash the feet of the one who was regarded as a non-person by the law. There was an early church order. Again, I can't say this, but the Didascalia Apostolatorum, it instructed bishops not to interrupt a service to greet a wealthy person of high rank who entered late. But if a poor man or woman entered the assembly, the bishop was to do whatever was needed to welcome them in, even if it meant the bishop were to end up sitting on the floor. That was how society got completely turned on its head was when Christians followed the compassion of Jesus and started to notice, to look, and then to make the changes. Compassion started getting lived out in Boaz when he invited her as well to come over, eat some bread, dip it in the wine. Compassion means offering friendship. And one of the best ways that's done is the whole picture of eating together, of saying, you know what, you're part of this group. We're going to eat together. That, again, in that day, as it is in ours, shows, it demonstrates the kind of relationship that we reach out to in others. And oftentimes, it's through relationship. It's the loneliness that is one of the greatest things that has a need that needs to be met. And I love the picture of the kingdom, that it's a feast, that it's God coming and saying, I'm going to come and eat with you, and you're going to have a banquet. And as we know, there was Jesus coming into feasts and eating with people, and he ate with all these people that were, you know, cast out and despised in the society at the time. And he says, you know what, I'm coming together with them. And when he did go to a rich man's house and was invited to a banquet, and it was always about being at the head of the table, being in the place of notice, Jesus, he would say, you know what, let me give you some advice. When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, your sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Jesus was saying, you know what, I'm turning things around. I have an outrageous love for every individual. And he was greatly pained when people would be undervalued. So there's just this incredible compassion that was shown through Jesus, that Boaz was a kind of a forerunner to, as a kinsman redeemer of somebody who would come along and come on behalf of the other person. And then finally we see in the picture of generosity here, a compassion that's worked out in giving more than enough. And that's where this kind of being open and free with our resources, with who we have, with our time, with our prayers, comes about. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 15 to 18, it says, when she went up and got up and went back to work, Boaz ordered his servants about Ruth. He said, let her glean where there's still plenty of grain in the ground. Make it easy for her. Better yet, pull some of the good stuff out and leave it for her to glean. Give her special treatment. There was this kind of calling that God was putting on Boaz's heart, and he was saying, I want to just go above and beyond. Not just enough food for her to kind of scrape by for tonight. But when she went home, it says that she had a full sack of barley, and she just poured the generosity on to her mother-in-law. Can you imagine the kind of party they would have had at home? Have you ever been a recipient of some great generosity by somebody else? Or maybe you've been the person, even better yet, to extend generosity. There's always a celebration that happens after that. And you can imagine them sitting around and going, wow, look at that. You see their response. God hasn't walked out on us yet. He's here. He's with us. There's a generous God who says, you know what, I want to give you everything. I have given you everything. And I want you to just take what you have, your time, your resources, your attention, your relationship, these things, your resources, and give it away, to let it overflow in generosity, to go there. You know, God desires and wants his people to be the kind of people who would be there for the need. This last Friday, we had a chance to go to Missions Fest, and it struck me as I was going, there's all these booths by different organizations all over the world. And I know Dalit Freedom, who we stand with and behind, and we stood with Compassion International and World Vision and Samaritan's Purse, some of these different organizations, they all had their booths there, and it just struck me, my goodness, the amount of generosity and compassion that goes out through the followers of Jesus to the whole world. And I hope that Coast Hills, I know that we get to be a part of it. The generosity of Coast Hills is evident. That we'd be known as a people who would stand behind people and give to those in need. And I find it humorous and ironic that even in the early church, there was that kind of a picture given of what the Christians started doing. The followers of Christ, they realized that compassion wasn't like an extra piece of equipment to take along the road. It was actually embodied who Jesus was. And so they would help everyone. And outsiders started to take notice of that. And there's a fourth century, there's a story of, it's actually documented, that late in the fourth century, an opponent of the faith, Emperor Julian the Apostate, he was chastising his priests and his temple for not keeping up with these followers of Jesus. And this is what's actually written. He says, I think that when the poor happen to be neglected and overlooked by the priests, the impious Galileans, that's the Christ followers, observed this and devoted themselves to benevolence. The impious Galileans supported not only their poor, but ours as well. Everyone can see that our people lack aid from us. He's like, what's going on with us? Why can't we do this? The followers of Christ are doing this. That's the kind of thing. And you know, even as Peter mentioned, in the restaurants or whatever, wherever Christ followers go, may they be known as people who have this incredible trust in God. That He's meeting my needs. He's generously giving to me. I will give to others. So we give to help the poor, to work through our community of faith here at Coast Hills, and to be generous in what we give. And God says, you know what? When you do that, you are portraying and you're announcing the new kingdom. In God, we see faithfulness and compassion meeting perfectly together. We have a God who says, you know what? I've stepped out in faithfulness to you, faithfully loving you. I'm committed to you. He says, I've come to you and I've even loved you when you weren't the most lovable. And oftentimes we aren't, and I'm going to faithfully love you. And I'm here to help you and to stand by you faithfully, no matter what. And in my compassion, I've given everything to you generously, is what God has done. And he says, you know, will you step out in faithfulness and trust God for the compassion? And even at times when it feels like God may be far off, to say, you know what, this is the thing I can do. I can faithfully do the things I can do. I will do the something I can do, like God has done for me. And I will trust him for his compassion in my life. I'm going to step out in compassion and trust him that he'll be faithful. He will keep giving generously to me. And this is what we receive from God and we give to others. And may this week be that kind of a week that we go out and we bless people in that way as well. I'll close in prayer. God, we just want to thank you for these stories, these tangible, historic, real stories of real people living out faithfulness and compassion in difficult times. And I thank you for how that shows us the character of you, Jesus. That you are faithful and compassionate to us and how we need that, God. And we recognize that there is just such grace given to us, Lord. In our unfaithfulness, you are there gracefully giving us your compassion. And Lord, I just want to thank you that we can draw closer to you, that we can walk through. May we walk through this week reflecting and living out that compassion and faithfulness through our lives to others. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Please stand. Let's close with it.